Hello there, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of season 2. For psyched to be with you, an absolutely fantastic episode for you. Today, I sit down with the legendary, hilarious, and insightful Dr. Sarah Hayes. Sarah Hayes is a licensed therapist, a clinical contributor, and a queer women of esports legend, amongst much, much more. Sarah is an all-round just wonderful person. I could chat to Sarah for days, if I'm being honest. You know, being in the geek therapy space, the sort of game study space, it's a pleasure to sort of sit down and talk with her. This episode, we do chat all things therapy, all things therapists, and then we share our joy for dystopian TV and anti-capitalist kind of perspective. So I very much enjoyed this one myself. It's very funny. For those listening along, if it's safe to do so, we came up with the idea sort of halfway through the episode that every time the word non-profit is used, take a sip of your beverage, stay hydrated. Little warning, there is some little bit of strong language used, but not enough for me to sort of hit the explicit tag. It's not repetitive or a lot, but just so you're aware, should you be listening in a family friendly focused environment, it's a great one, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here's the episode. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Psych Tibby with you. With me, your host, Christopher Leach, part of the Blind Psyche Network. I've just decided it is. Got another cracking episode coming up for you today, with one of simply my favourite people. I'm very excited. I'll let them introduce themselves for you now. But this is going to be a fun one. Sit back, relax, get yourself a beverage, and enjoy. My special guest, please, could you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, what you do.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Dr. Sarah Hayes. I am a woman of many nonprofit roles. I am a full-time clinician with Game to Grow, a 501c3 that does tabletop role-playing game and game group work for social skill development. And we have a branch of therapy provisions. And then I also am a clinical contributor for Take This, another 501c3 that does educational outreach and support for mental health in the game space. I am a, I officially have minted a brand new title, and this is the first place I'm actually debuting, that I am the director of programming at Queer Women of Esports, another 501c3 that aims to uplift and help folks develop in the esports industry who identify as marginalized, gendered, and queer. I am also an advisor for the Games Hotline. No surprises here. It's a nonprofit that supports the game space to help address harassment and online abuse. And then I think that's everything. Is, I kind of check all the boxes. I don't know.
Is there anything you do for profit?
No, but I make a living amongst all of it. So I'm glad for that.
Okay, I mean, I'm fairly anti-capitalist on this show. We've said that many times before, so I definitely support that. Not for profit is definitely the way all business should work. But that's a political tangent. Let's not get started because I get very ranty. Sarah, it's great to have you on. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it immensely. It's almost, again, it's still kind of surreal. And I've said this a few times on the podcast already. But I've been a fan of your work at Take This and such for a while. We got to meet at PAX East. That was just something like I've never expected to experience in the world. It's great. And yeah, it's a good time. So it was great to sort of meet you in the offline world there, and then sort of you share conversations on the online world also. As per, you've got a lot that you could sort of dig into there with what you do. So let's dial it back a little smidge, and we'll go. We'll go backwards to go forwards. How did you end up doing all of those? Where did we start?
So as many of us in the psychological space know, we don't typically anymore. Where do I begin? It used to be, back in my day in academics, that there wasn't specialties for things like cyberpsych or games in psychology. where I went to school, it was just counseling or clinical. And so as a good old healthy anti-capitalist as I am, I went for counseling psychology because I wanted the skills, not the ability to slap some generics labels on people. Not that there's anything wrong with clinical psychology, but I just felt it was more hands-on. So I started there, and I basically wrote every single paper I could. Every focus of any project was on games. Now, eventually I got to my dissertation. The professors knew it was coming. Thankfully, they were supportive of me in studying games. And so I was formulating my survey for folks for my dissertation. And I focused on individually played role-playing games, the primary avatars you use to play those games, and the things we have in common for those of us who favor particular ones. So no one had done individually played role-playing games, that is, at the time that I was writing my dissertation in this way. So I reached out to a scholar in the space, Dr. Anthony Bean, and asked him how he structured his survey. And he was like, hey, while we're having this conversation, would you like to panel at PAX? PAX is literally the reason why I have every single employment opportunity I've had. I wouldn't have expected it. I would agree with you that PAX is one of those experiences that it's like, this is not what I anticipated out of a games convention. But boy, howdy, did it bring like all of the friends that... the vast majority of my friends that I hold as my closest friends come from that space. And all of the folks that I met along the way are why, like, I met Dr. B from Take This, paneling next to him on a panel about moral choices in games. And we were having an argument that had gone into a tangent about which Avenger is best. And I still hold that the Hulk is better than Cap. And so that was a live argument on stage. And afterwards, he's like, hey, you want to come work with me? So
fight with people if you want to work with them.
That's it. Only in the nonprofit space, maybe. Yeah.
That's the lesson. You heard it here first, people.
Right. Yep. Preferably in front of a crowd of several hundred people, because that's, you know, how everybody wants to spend their time.
I mean, if you're not doing it in front of an audience, what's the point?
That's it, right?
Like, why bother?
Exactly. And so that's where I met all of my employers, in fact. Which has led me down some funky roads. Because then it's like, I met the folks at the Feminist Frequency was always such a, like, a fan thing for me. And now I work on like a DM basis with Anita Sarkeesian, and that's just a strange reality to live in. I don't know what this is or how I got here, which is why it's weird when you say like I'm a big fan of your work, because I don't feel like like I'm just trying to do the games thing, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, cool.
It's definitely I would describe it as things that sort of happen to you more than like things that you attempt to do. Like, obviously, like, you know, you put the work in to be in the spaces and to do the thing and to be in front of the people, but then like everything else just kind of like happens just to you, and then you're like, how did I end up here?
I feel like they're right, whoever says that it's so much like finding work and how your life goes is so much based on like timing, luck, and who you know.
Yeah.
Because that's very much how I've ended up where I am.
So I'm about to muddy the time space that we're in, because by the time this goes out, what I'm about to mention will have already happened, but it hasn't happened at the time we're recording. But I'm doing a talk at SciPag, a conference for psychology postgraduates, and I'm actually doing one on social media and content creation, like a beginner's guide, with the title slide you're going to be. It was through Twitter I ended up at PAX. Simple as that. Like, yo, yes, causation and a few steps in there, but essentially through Twitter was how I got there. And, you know,
that's wild.
Was well supported and looked after by the people there, moreover. So,
it's,
you know,
just absurd how we get there.
You know, and then you think, oh no, that's me now. I'm stuck. This is it. Five non-profit organizations for life. There we go. Okay,
there we go. That's it. I mean, technically, over here, if you work at a nonprofit, categorically full-time, which in the United States is 32 and a half hours specifically per week, then you can dutifully pay your student loans every month, and after 10 years, they will forgive them all. Oh, so stay the long and steady. Why not?
Well, especially if you've done as many degrees as you have. You know, like definitely need to be able to do that, you know. So you do a lot. There's a lot going on. Have you got any sort of like particular pieces of work that you want to give mention to that you've been up to recently?
Sure. So I hinted that I've been in contact with the folks at Feminist Frequency. This is because at Take This, we've partnered up with Feminist Frequency to begin an initiative called the Culture Shift Project. For NDA reasons, I can't explain who we do this with right now, but we're doing it. And it's a project that addresses gender-based harm in the workspace and game development.
You would call that timely, one might say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd say that's timely given the events that are happening in the game space at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And so that is something that we're actively addressing and working on. And so that's been a lot of fun being a facilitator of that project. So I go into the games company and do the talk. We do listening sessions. We have three phases. The first phase is creating a like shared language and discussing the issues. The second phase is addressing like people with feet on ground, so to speak, even though it's the panini. So, I mean, faces on Zoom, but folks.
Sorry, my brain just went like, paninis, like.
I do love a good sandwich. But how to deal with one another and manage what we need to do to have a more equitable and respectful workspace. And then the third phase is about policy change, so an institutional level of shift. So it's exciting. I'm thrilled by it.
There was just something, and I've said this many times, I say it basically every time I think I'm physically online these days, but there's just something about the work that people like you are doing, that Take This or do, that just fills my heart with such joy. And to even like observe it is delightful in many ways. I think it's because, like, you know, from my perspective, I suppose, it's like, well, it's best set of hands to be doing that type of work. And that's the sort of comfort to it. Because anyone could, I think, could offer that type of thing and say they're going to do it.
Sure.
But not do it well or do it properly. So you're not.
That is the goal. This,
you know?
I know. I love Take This too. They're amazing.
So you've sort of mentioned that. Give us, is there anything else you want to sort of give us a shout out or anything you got in the pipeline? I know I heard people talking about things like Twitch tags and stuff. Somewhere going on with that.
Tags.
I like, you know, the way people use the mental health ones, I think. I think I was speaking to Dr. Kelly Dunlop about that in the last episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we have been starting to approach doing some research in why and how people use the mental health tag on Twitch. It's very early on in the process, so we'll see where that ends up going. You'll probably see a couple other friendly faces you might or might not know along the way in that project. I don't know if she's ready for that to be announced, so I'll keep that here and tell you off cam later. Nice. But yeah,
secrets viewers. Mine.
Sorry, viewers. But yeah, that's going to be exciting. I think it's Twitch is social media is a weird place. Twitch is a very weird place.
Yes, like, you know. Needless to say, I'll never forget the time I wandered into the ASMR section. Because I'm partial to a bit of ASMR, and I was, you know, like the Grandpa Simpson thing? Like, he walked in, I put my hat on, went straight back out.
Which is funny because, speaking of, as we've been doing our initial research work to figure out what our parameters for the study are, we're already finding a whole bunch of ASMR streamers use the mental health tag.
Because, like, ASMR is calming, I guess? Like, maybe that's the logic? I don't know. You know.
I have no idea. It's a great question.
Is that perhaps now more? I'm not crapping on the work. It's just something because since I had that conversation with Kelly, which is last episode. Check that out after this one. Little plug. But like, since then, Twitch have announced that you'll be able to add custom tags now. So that's going to be interesting to see what people come up with.
Oh, geez. All I think about, all my brain does is it goes into the whole researcher open answer question shit. Like, oh no. Because that means there's going to be how many iterations of misspelling of mental health or mental illness. So now it increases what we have to think about.
But more data, which we like.
True.
My first thought was how many ways are people just going to, like, you know, deliberately misspell stuff? And, like,
right?
Just, like, we're going to end up with some really wonderful tags.
Or purposefully misspell things in order to circumvent policy. So, like...
Like bobs.
Slurs. Like, yeah.
Bobs instead of boobs and stuff. Like.
Yes. Boys.
And you know, you might think, why is he saying that? It's like, have you been on the internet?
Right.
You know.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah.
Buckle up, Buttercup. It's going to be a ride.
We should have opened the show with that. Just buckle up. That's amazing. But yeah, so you are doing a whole bunch of really awesome things, which is very cool. I very much enjoy to hear about it. You know, what do you find any time to do stuff when you're not working? Is that a thing? I've had this conversation with a few people who just seem to seemingly never stop.
I mean, I'd like to think I'm not as busy as those folks. I know I have a lot of, like, titles. Lately has been intense because at Queer Women of Esports, we just wrapped up our third cycle of mentorship, and that's kind of my baby. And so I did, like, I arranged 20 young folks doing 15-minute presentations of a project I've been conducting them to do for 6 months. And so it was, like, the pinnacle of that whole thing, and it was a lot of stress. So now it's, like, I wake up, I sit on the couch with my two big dogs, we watch something stupid, and then I get going on my day, because it's, like, finally I have that, like, hour in the morning to just kind of sit around. But, I mean... My fiance and I did a puzzle last night. That was
like a
fun.
Jigsaw?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Or we've been playing Cuphead recently.
Oh, nice.
So I guess what I'm trying to say without realizing it is that if I'm not doing an ample amount of work, I like to add stress in my own life again.
Yeah, no, I resonate with that. Like, why have a calm, enjoyable time when you can be perpetually stressed?
Right. Right.
Because, you know, you need that to exist.
Like... Totally. Exactly. Or, like, wedding planning. It's fine. Everything's fine. This is great.
Yeah, that is, like, I am told, one of the least stressful things ever. Like, moving.
Ever.
Like, it's so stress-free.
Yeah. Super, super easygoing. Just a typical Saturday. Just some extra pizza, beer, and effort.
Yeah. Like, just fine. It's like, I don't have to go to the gym. This is a workout. It's fine. Like...
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Out of interest, how are wedding plans going? I'll officially sort of say congratulations.
Good.
Obviously,
Thank you.
Proposal was well, impossible to forget and ingrained in the internet forever, which must feel pretty awesome.
Is.
Happening at PAX East this year.
Yes. It was a surprise to me, of course. It happened on your birthday, so thank you for sharing that day. And it was a wild ride. It was a lot of fun. PAX is such a special place, and I always have my birthday there when PAX West happens. So it's sort of all of the holidays always fall on PAX for me. So I think Harris took a cue out of that and just kind of, let's put this holiday in on this day before their birthday too. So it was sort of a big risk, but
it was a wild time. It was a good time.
It was.
Out of interest, have you whoops, I just dropped a pin badge, pardon me.
Oh no.
That's what I get for fiddling. so I have to ask, purely because it's hilarious, but that panel, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because it was Make It Queer, You Cowards, right?
It was terrible for me. It was a wonderful panel, put on by some wonderful people at GamerX, a queer... nonprofit in the game space.
Wait, did you just say nonprofit again? Right, if you're listening back to this, take a sip of water every time Sarah says nonprofit.
So many
you'll
times.
You'll be so hydrated.
So hydrated. But they put on this panel where Katie, the executive director, pitched to me, and she's like, "Sarah, you're a funny person," which I feel like I have my moments, but I don't feel like I'm an objectively funny person. Like, you're an objectively funny person. I don't know that I would be categorized.
You know, reverse. As... I was going to say, I know you're an incredibly funny person. What's this?
No. Well, I guess it's contextual, because when I got up on this panel where you're supposed to basically improvise answers to like funny prompts based on a game that you draw out of a hat, if I knew the game, which was hard pressed, then I really struggled to come up with something funny. And then the prompts were all surrounding like dating and love and marriage, because they're not subtle. and everybody was in on it.
Oh yeah. So even I was in on it. I arrived like the day before.
Right. And so it was like, so many people in the audience knew, the entire panel knew, except for, I think, the one person next to me, Kyle Danger, didn't know. And I think that was just because he was so busy, because he basically runs the diversity lounge or the Together Intersection at PAX. So he is constantly busy and hard to get a hold of. But it was flop after flop, and this was final destination level. Sarah's going to win. Damn it. And so when the final, like, the points are BS on purpose, like, Four unicorns and three rainbows and two glitter kisses, you know, like dumb points. And then we get to the end and other people are getting awarded their baby narwhals. And there's still a rainbow narwhal, the giant one. And I'm like, I'm not winning the giant narwhal. I did absolute trash. Liz Bear was on the panel and killed it and should have definitely won, I hold to this day.
I mean, we can just about see the narwhal behind you, I believe.
Yeah, you can. It's right there. Yeah. Right there with my PAX lanyard. And so I get this narwhal and I'm like, okay, what's going on? And then I look up and everybody in the crowd is holding up their phones.
That's when you knew something was up. No one cares this much.
My fiance was the scorekeeper at the time. And so they're making jokes the whole time, which they're a much funnier person than me. They should just be on the panel. But so they're like, so we call it making it queer, but I'm wondering if we can just take a little more time and make it gay some more. And then I was like, oh God. And then they walk next to the stage and kneel, and I'm still up on stage. And so I'm sitting here looking down, hoping they don't feel awkward doing this as we're like effectively like a floor apart. And I'm like, please don't trip down the stairs, Sarah, please don't trip down the stairs. And then we're in masks, so we can't kiss. And I like aggressively nod so the audience knows it's okay. Like, how do we make this visibly known?
I will dig out like one of the videos and tweets, and I'll link it to the episode below wherever you found this, so that you can see this moment unfold with your own eyes.
Yes. And it was a streamed panel, and I had friends who couldn't make it or who stay home because they are immunocompromised, and large gatherings of people of any sort are very dangerous for them. And I mean, technically, they're very dangerous for all of us, but here we are taking risks.
I mean, just being around people is dangerous and unwanted, really.
True. And so they watched online and lots of clips happened, and apparently my parents saw the clip before I even got a chance to call them right after. So I mean, it was just a yeah. Everybody knew before I knew. Everybody knew. So it was which is a challenge, because I don't think my parents would have gone to that panel, which I don't think they did. I think someone sent them a clip like immediately after it happened. And then, you know, as one will, we celebrated with Oreo salad, which was not Oreo salad.
The traditional.
But it was the traditional Midwesterner.
So I creamed that Oreo salad myself.
You did, in the hotel room.
Yep. And we're going to leave that with no more context and let listeners work that out themselves.
Is this the second where we both blush?
Let them think
that
whatever they want.
That one was captured on TikTok, it's fine. Oh, yeah. Did you know that is still Rachel's highest trending video?
I feel like part of her must be really annoyed about that.
Oh my goodness.
It was premium content, that's all I have to say.
Oh yes, so it's true.
I do have to probe just with the panel, because obviously the object was you get given like a game or a franchise, and you had to like make it more gay, right? And famously, you were given, was it Final Fantasy or Final Fantasy VII specifically? And you just...
No.
You just flapped it.
I have no idea. And now I have a fresh copy of the remake. Nice. Waiting for my stream debut.
Nice.
And I'm going to play it.
Because I mean, like, it's people with big swords. It's not that hard to make it more gay. Like, there's a screenshot from Crisis Core where three men are all touching swords. The material was there for you to use, yeah?
It's right there. And I had to publicly admit in front of all of my friends, online and live, that I have never played Final Fantasy. I, in my defense, I owned Final Fantasy 12, 13 for the PlayStation 2, and then the copy was like corrupted, so I never actually played it. I also am a big Kingdom Hearts fan. There's a Keyblade right here.
Nice.
And so that is an offshoot of Final Fantasy, and that is my defense. That is my only defense.
And
I present it to you with shame.
It would not hold up in court, I'm afraid.
But I know who Cloud is. Fair. And Sephiroth and Aqua and all of those.
Exactly, they're the only ones that you need to actually know. That's fine.
Right, and there's still Moogles.
Yeah, oh God, Moogles are the
there's
best.
No Chocobos, love which Moogles. Is a shame, honestly.
Love Chocobos, it's all good. Well, I think you'll enjoy the remake. The remake, especially because I played the original Kingdom Hearts myself. It plays like similarly in that it's action based more than time based, but both the original Final Fantasy VII and the remake are both very, very good. I've put far too many hours into both. Final Fantasy VII Remake is one of the few games I actually have a platinum off. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Oh, I mean, you know, it came out during the COVID times, the lockdown, so I was alternating between and Animal Crossing. It was great.
Who didn't? I was going to say Animal Crossing. There's cheers to Dr. Rachel Covert if she's listening. She better take a sip of her water.
Oh, yeah. Non-profit.
Non-profit. That's it.
There you go. Okay, cool. So, have you been sort of playing anything recently? You said the remake's sitting there waiting. What are you sort of getting through?
Yes. So, right now, if you follow me for any length of time on social media or have followed me anywhere, if you've seen me on a panel, anything, I'll probably drop this information. I'm a huge fan of Slime Rancher. It's kind of on perpetual play for me because they're coming out with the second one, which I can't wait for. I'm like itching for. So I'm replaying.
For the benefit of uninformed mortals, what is Slime Rancher? Yes. Can you give us the TLDR?
Yes, Slime Rancher is a game that you can play on pretty much everything except for PlayStation, I think, for licensing reasons. But maybe not. Maybe you can even, I think it's like fairly unilateral. But Slime Rancher is a first-person based ranching sim where you play Bee, who is a, is a female character, but I don't know that we ever truly learn her gender. There are secret queer secrets to the story of it, which I really appreciate. You also never hear Bee speak. You only hear, I don't know if anyone speaks. Nope, no one ever speaks. You don't ever hear voices of characters. You just see text, which is strange. And I typically don't like games all that much when they don't have like...
Ugh, no one wants to play games to read. Ugh.
Right.
Ugh, this is
there's
no
a lot
book.
Of cute sounds and beautiful music, and it's basically like an adventure sim where you start off on the far, far range and you have your own little like broken down ranch and you have to make it better. And there's a few different other farmers on the planet that you're on, but they're pretty few and far between. And so you sort of supply things and develop your your ranch with some farm things like produce and gather different slimes. And then for the sake of being transparent, basically what you do is you feed slime to gather their poop, which are called plorts, and then you sell them in the plort market and then you make money. So it's kind of a critique on capitalism also, which as we've hinted towards is also something that I enjoy. So not capitalism, the whole critique of.
Thank you for...
To be clear.
I'm going to like legit just cut that clip out of context. Like, yeah, capitalism, which we know I like. Just...
Totally. Great. Excellent. Thank you, Internet. I retire. but that slime rancher, it's very cute. I think it helps to play cute things when the world is really stressful. It also helps me feel good because it's like when I feel overwhelmed by people, I can go on this game and literally deal with nobody. Just a bunch of blobs of slime. Which is funny.
It's just probably more entertaining than people. Totally.
Arguably, although some of them are pretty wily, they can get pretty aggressive and mean, and they're hangry, which I can relate to.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, I've been playing Cuphead for the first time, which aesthetically is like, it checks all my boxes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chef's kiss.
I love the history that they put into and the thoughtfulness they put into like the character and story and visual and audio design. It is punishing to say the least. And so, of course, then the logical answer is to play it with my partner.
Because why not test your relationship, you know?
Exactly. It's like playing Portal 2. Just like, yep, do you want to fight this afternoon? Because that's what you're asking for. But I can't get enough of it. I hadn't played it when it came out. I know that I'm behind the times on a lot of games, and that's one of them, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, I've played like a bit of Cuphead. Weirdly enough, I don't own it, so I've only played it through like a friend's like remote play. Probably played online. And like it's good, it's very difficult. But it is It's good fun, and like as you say, the aesthetic is wonderful. The music. Oh
yes.
Well, that soundtrack is what I would describe. Oh, I believe, man. The kids would say dank.
Some yes.
Dank jazz, if that's a term. If it's not, I've just coined it.
Perfect. I think I've heard that one before. I don't think you're off mark.
Dang. Okay, well that's cool. That's cool. You mentioned like you like to sit and watch it a bit daft. Any good TV that you're into?
Ooh.
I mean, especially if you're watching it with your dogs, you know?
Oh yeah. They love it. Let's see, what am I watching these days? I have like the silly answers of things I'm watching for like clients. The weird part about being a therapist is you watch things not because you want to, like Wild Wild Country to learn more about cults or various anime that I never would have seen otherwise. But right now, for my own consumption, I've been watching The Staircase on HBO because the real life one was a little slow paced for me. Mm-hmm. On Netflix. So give me actors who replay it dramatically and all of a sudden I'm hooked. What else have I been watching? I don't know. I feel like I've been watching things. We've been watching Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Nice.
I don't even know. I just sit and stare. Watching TV sometimes for me, like, I've put on 90 Day Fiancé and... My partner turns to me and is like, why do you watch that when you listen to people talk about their lives all day and then you're watching video about people's lives? It's like, because I don't have to give any feedback. I just get to watch it.
Fair enough. I think that's, I mean, like, you know, not to get too, like, philosophical or, like, indeed
sure.
pretentious, you know, a little pinky. But I think there's a difference between art and entertainment. You know, you want something on because you just want to enjoy it and allow it to melt your brain's stress away. And then other things you want to watch is like, oh yes, this is intellectually stimulating, you know, and you want to be maybe challenged or critique it and stuff like that. And there's a huge difference there. You can need both, you know.
It's true. It's true. And for the things that like I actively want to watch, we've been watching The Orville. That's really good.
Nice.
It's like the love letter to Star Trek by Seth MacFarlane. How about yourself? What have you been watching?
So, okay, right, about to confess. So I had never actually watched the US Office. I'd seen clips, I'd always gone, okay, the UK one, but then obviously, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Ricky Gervais, particularly at the moment, for various reasons. And I was like, oh, you know, but the British one, it's British humour, American, like, you know, a lot of American TV gets it wrong. And, like, I think every time I'd started to watch it, because that sort of first season is, like, you know, essentially the same thing, it doesn't land as well, which I think is why I never actually got through it all. But love it. Like, it's once it developed and sort of grew into its own animal, it's really interesting as well, because it's written in part by Mike Shaw, who has also been on Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
yes.
The Good Place. And it's fun to see, like, the elements of his work develop, even though I watched essentially shows backwards. Because, like, you look at, like, some of the characters in The Office, and you see, like, you see a character like Stanley, and you see how that developed into Ron in Parks and Rec. You know, you see, like, the evolution there. Because, you know, I'm a psychologist, so I can't not analyze everything that happens.
Oh, yeah, you can't turn that off.
No.
Yeah.
And to make it worse, I did media in college, so I'm even, like, looking at, well, that's an interesting shot. Oh, the mise-en-scene. Because, you know, pinky out pretension. It's like everything I watch is kind of like bimodal. And it's like there's me watching it for the sake of watching it. And there's then like the person on the desk next to me in my brain that's taking all the notes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. My favorite show is Black Mirror. Far and away.
Oh.
For that reason.
I love to quote this out. There is like, you know, like on Facebook, it gives you memories, like old posts.
Mm-hmm.
There is one of mine where before the first ever episode of Black Mirror went out saying, cannot wait to watch this, to watch Charlie Brooker's new creation. It's going to be amazing. So I knew it was cool before it was cool, just saying.
I believe it. I really enjoy it. And it's one of those, like, if something makes me think, I'm really happy. I'll watch the trash when I'm not trying to think, but I'll watch shows like that when I'm trying to actually engage with media.
Have you got, like, a favorite episode?
Oh, gosh. That's a really tough question. I forget the names of the episodes, exactly.
I was going to say, I don't think I could, like, physically name them, but you can give us, like, the synopsis, because they're all very distinct.
Thankfully, we have the internet at our fingertips as well.
Whoa, are you pro-gaming this podcast? You're, like, literally looking them up?
What?
Mid-show? What?
What?
Imagine having talented, intelligent people on your show. That's wild.
I think it's so hard to pick one because they all touch on so many different things. And I think what's really concerning is that at this point, some of them have come true. But
I will never forget the delirium caused by the story that broke with the Prime Minister and the pig. When we found out a real live event
episode did
actually take place that was very similar.
Yes.
Years after the episode came out. And we were like, how did he know? Who is providing
these sources? Shut Up and Dance is something that happens all the time. I think my favorites are torn between Playtest, which is from season 3, which arguably, if you ask most folks, was the best season. Because it has things like Nosedive, which is where you the like rating system. The blackmail episode. It has San Junipero, which is like far and away the most approachable episode.
Yeah, one of like the nicest yet like it's dystopian, but it's got a smile on its face, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't make you walk away feeling like I can't watch anymore. Like some of them will. Like I don't encourage anybody to binge this series as a person who binges this series.
Do and as like, I say, not as I do, right? Like
exactly.
Listen, I'm a qualified
myself a glutton
professional.
For punishment. Yes, glutton for punishment. People are like, how do you therapist during a panini? And I mean, my answer, if not nonprofits, is
drink.
You know, glutton for punishment because it's just I don't know.
That's
doing
like
that, doing that work feels good, and that's sort of like watching these. And then the other one that I really enjoy is, oh, where is it? Striking Vipers.
Oh, nice. That's the fighting game one, right? With the guy?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that one. That's a good one.
And the one that came out before Cyberpunk came out, where we all thought that's what Cyberpunk would sort of be like, and
Oh,
then it
yeah.
definitely wasn't.
It definitely wasn't. Yeah.
The disappointment. Not that everybody wanted to go and have sex in Cyberpunk, but just like, being able to do whatever you wish, to truly open box game, and then it's sort of it's a very entertaining game, and it is also strongly structured around the narrative of the game. So, yeah.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I'm always happy to meet fellow fans of Black Mirror. I feel like I think it's a I'm going to say syndrome of having an abundance of television to watch, in that like it's so easy for shows to just fall through the cracks. Like, I don't actually think I've heard anyone mention Black Mirror for so long because there is a never-ending spiel of television that is always being thrown at us. Like, I recently watched
Yeah.
it in its entirety. I would go as far as say binged it, but The Boys, that was exciting.
Oh, see, that's what I can't binge. I couldn't finish Sons of Anarchy. I can't watch Shameless as a therapist. No way.
Now, when
Too
you say
close.
Shameless, you mean the US show Shameless?
Yes.
Because there's a
I
different one
think
in the
I could
UK.
probably watch the UK one. Probably different. Have you seen Upload?
I have not.
It's a good one. It's on Prime. It's sort of the similar neo-dystopian flavor.
So you mentioned
But
there about like as a therapist, it's quite interesting because you also feature on Reaction Time with Dr. Rachel
yes,
Kohler, where
it's
you
true.
guys dissect representations of therapists on TV.
It's true.
Do
Yes.
you have a favorite flavor of television therapist?
Flavor, I don't know, but
I don't know why I said
some of
flavor. It's
them
not like you're tasting it, but
I think that talks of it, that nods towards like an aggregate theme of like this is the better kind of therapist to have. Two offshoots that are representations that aren't entirely terrible, with of course exceptions due to story problems. One of which is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. The therapist in that show, other than some obvious ethical breaches of confidentiality and et cetera, is really, they do a decent job of representing some notes of like boundaries and things therapists might actually say. Also, Lucifer, other than having sex with Lucifer along the way and terrible, terrible boundaries with dual relationships. In the therapy office, she is not an incredibly terrible representation.
Wait, you mean therapists
So,
don't always sleep with their clients like that? You're telling me that's not a thing that happens all the
I mean, on occasion, if the wind strikes you right, but no, for again, another clip that could damn my career. Folks,
time?
don't have sex with your clients is the first thing, the steady thing we learned in ethics class. And no, sex doesn't happen with clients. If clients have attraction, we have to address it in the room. So it's like,
Well, famously transference, that's a
yes.
construct that exists.
Yep, sometimes therapists can get attracted to their clients and then they have to work out what to do with it. But I have not had that experience thus far. I'm gonna knock on wood because I'm grateful for that, but you never know.
Fair enough. But yeah, so again, I'll link that down to wherever you found this episode. But Reaction Time is a treat. It's very enjoyable.
Yay.
And it's really funny again to sort of like just see just how wonky some of these representations are. I mean, even like ones like
Yes.
I really like, you did an episode with Dr. B when you talked about Frasier. I really like Frasier. It's one of my favorite TV shows easily, but like it's definitely all a bit wonky, if not like deliberately so. And one of the
Yes.
things I really like about that from a comedic point of view is that like I can sit and watch it with my mom and we can both laugh at different things. Like Frasier and Niles will be there talking about like they'll make like a Frasier joke and I'll be on the floor. And like, and then Marty will say something that's just like, "Will you two just stop it?" And just, like something really like deadpan and just like straightforward that cuts through the kind of intellectual garb. And like, my
Yes.
mum will find that dead funny. And I think that's the true nature of
Perfect.
having like that representation of psychology, psychiatry, but then like someone who's like just not interested and doesn't care, that just cuts through that baloney, as you might say in the US.
Yes. It's well balanced and very approachable.
Yes,
I would say if I had seen that show earlier on, because amongst the things I ashamedly admit I haven't seen prior, Frasier was something I consumed for the first time on Reaction Time, which we did a second episode with Dr. B, by the way.
Yes.
So that's, if it hasn't already come out, it's down the pipeline. And then we just did an episode with Dr. Kelly Dunlap with watching BoJack Horseman. So,
oh, what a TV show too. That is, by the way.
Yeah. First time I saw that either. There's a lot of movies and other shows that I've seen therapists in that I have on our list. But we're always accepting more suggestions and we've done some really fun ones so far.
I really enjoy sorry, go on.
No, you. Oh.
I was going to say, I really enjoy like Gene and Sex Education.
There's something really
nice. Like, again, because it's a TV show, there's always that bit of drama, a few things that shouldn't happen. But, like, you know, like, definitely that, like, the core of it, like, the heart of it there, like, there's some really, really nice exchanges in, and you're like, oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, yes. There are some really good moments there where, like, those are therapy moments. I think therapy moments are much more appropriate to describe in TV than like a therapist themselves as a unit. It's a lot clearer. And I also technically, I forget the podcasts I do, but I'm on Brain Noodles with Geek, with Geeks Like Us for the third season right now with Dr. Megan Connell and Dr. Fantasy Lozado and Dr. Amelia Herbst. So
everyone has immediately stopped listening and has gone to that podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. Great episode. I'm definitely going to give that a little follow after this myself because I enjoy a good podcast while also hosting.
It is fun. We just noodle around non-psychology things. So one recent episode, I went and did research on all of the really creepy Pokemon lore.
Just
reacted to Pokemon lore and the psychology they're in. But we talk about everything from like pandemic and finding hope to like the games we play and what's happening. And I don't know. Yeah, it's fun.
That sounds
random.
That's awesome. It sounds more fun than anything I'd be able to produce, I'll be honest.
Actually sounds genuinely entertaining. You also produce entertaining and different material, and I feel like it's all part of a healthy diet of podcasts, and it's great.
Healthy diet. Get you five a day.
Yes.
Ladies, gents, and people. Five a day of your podcast.
We've provided you for three opportunities in this very podcast.
Yeah. You know, non-profit.
Woo!
Sorry, I've completely forgotten what the heck we were talking about.
That's okay.
So we were chatting TV and stuff. Yeah, awesome. One of the things I always like to do when people like yourself have a decorative background is, would you mind sort of telling us a little bit about what's on your shelves?
Sure. We can do show and tell. So on the top shelf behind me, you can see I have, of course, my Psychomancer holding a Bi Pride flag that I got from doing a live role playing panel with GamerX and Take This, where we did Visigoths versus Molgoths. Dr. B and I were Molgoths and battled it out for the winners of prom royalty. I believe we lost. I don't even remember. It was a hoot. A horse was in a fountain. It was a great time.
It was a hoot.
It was a goat. A goat ended up in a fountain. Anyways.
Not a real goat, I feel like we should stress.
No, it was all role play. On its foot is a sticker I want to call out to one of our very dear friends, Aaron, or also known as Son of a, has given me of our Minnesotan heritage that says ope.
Ope.
Which is kind of the Minnesotan way of reacting to pretty much anything. So like you're trying to go about your life and you bump into somebody. Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's just part of the vernacular. Or if you drop something, oh, although if you asked me when I was a very small child, I would literally say, whoops-a-daisy. I don't know why in that accent. That's just something that was my catchphrase as a very small child. I've never told anyone that on any kind of a recording. So congratulations.
That's another one for the clip.
That's it.
So you know, I'm going to splice that together. I just love capitalism and I sleep with all my clients. Whoops-a-daisy.
I can't wait for the career assassination. Oh my goodness. Oh, we always have fun, don't we?
You did this to yourself.
I did, and I'm here for it, and I'm loving it.
But so is Ope not just like an underdeveloped oops? Like,
kind of, yeah. It's always such a strong part of our language. Like, you go boating, and it's not just boating. Because when I lived on the West Coast for a while, I learned that O's aren't long everywhere else, although I knew that, but like I learned how to not long O. And so when I'm home, you know, we're over there and we're just talking about going boating on the Tuesday afternoon, and we're going to just have a good time having some hot dish on our little boat, you know.
Some more salad.
And so there's, yeah, of course, that is for holidays and celebrations, which was appropriate. I just didn't know.
Surely when you're out boating, it's a celebration every time.
It is. Every time. And yacht rock, always. You listen to anything else, you're doing it wrong. of course, I was named after a Jefferson Airplane song, so what can I say? Yes, boating is great. Boating is one of my favorite activities. I'm very proudly Minnesotan in heritage, although technically I'm from Iowa, if we talk about birth roots. But there's just a whole bunch of corn there, so we don't count it.
Razzin it. Like,
fully Midwestern. Next to it is a hand custom painted N64, courtesy of my very good friend and ex-husband. On top of it is like pink flare, like dark pink flare, which that has been a prized possession ever since. I have a Funko Tower of Terror behind it, the Ecto-1 from the new Ghostbusters movie in Legos that I built. That was my first big build. I have a Baby Yoda featuring the shield that is sold by Beetle and Grimm for Take This. Nice. And then I have Level Up Dice, which those are the Radical Glass ones that are a cathedral print. And then I have a Baby Groot.
Nice. I will also say, just because I got it to hand, I'll show the little lady. That's the one, the pin.
Yes, that's the one.
For listeners, it's metal, so it's a nice weighty pin with a sword on, yes, some gold tapering around the edges, then a blue line, and then sort of silver. It feels enjoyable.
Yes, it is. It has a lovely hand feel, and it is quite a standout when you wear it on like a lapel. I have my PAX lanyard hanging, which is encrusted with several buttons, which is one focus of PAX. Next to it, the rainbow narwhal stuffed animal, which I received on the eve of my engagement. Technically above my chair, you can see I have a Tower of Terror hat. It's probably my favorite ride at Disney, not because it goes up and down wee-woo, but I love the theme. And it feels... I love the inside and behind the scenes stories of everything from movies to rides. And so I am just a huge fan of that history there with Disney. I have bookends that are shields from a shield and sword from Zelda, a mushroom stuffed animal, Mickey ears from my trip to Disneyland. Was that Disneyland before the, no, that was this year that I, or last year. I don't know. I go to Disney a few times.
Time is irrelevant, you know.
It is. It's the Panini nonprofits. So I went with Harris when we went on a trip in December. And then I have a Baby Groot, which is a hand-felted, potted Baby Groot.
Oh. I only like Baby Groot that are hand-felted, so you know.
Yes. Ooh, la, la. Otherwise, a bunch of color organized books, thanks to my future niece-in-law. And then final one that I'll point out is a teeny tiny little Freud holding up his cigar.
Nice.
Tiny little action figure.
Are you a psychologist if you don't have some Freud merch? Let's be honest.
It's true. I think I received it like my sophomore year of undergrad, and I've held on to it ever since.
Nice. That's good. I appreciate that nice audio description. A, for my own interest, but also, you know what I mean, as someone who has very busy shelves behind themselves, it's always nice to hear the what and the why, which is the whole theme of the show. So we'll tap into that. So so you've kind of took us through a little bit about your journey, and we've talked about some of the stuff you don't do when you're working, but what was it that kind of led you down this path? Was there any sort of significant kind of events or sort of desires that made you sort of work in so many nonprofits, drink.
Right. I didn't initially choose
it
the
chose
nonprofit
you.
path. It did.
You didn't choose the nonprofit life. Nonprofit life chose you.
That's it. Dr.
That's
B
three drinks, by
was
the way.
Instrumental in that. That is three drinks. He pulled me into the work at Take This, and then I don't know. There's something to living your values in a way that, like, sometimes we have to seek out our values and then seek out work that fulfills them, whether that's personal work or professional work. And sometimes our values are reminded to us as we do something, and that feels very close to how it is for me. I think that I just wanted to work in the game space and I didn't care how. And so that was really instrumental in guiding that path. But I think it just so happens that a lot of the folks that I got along with at PAX did nonprofit work. I dabbled Great. In some stuff. Like I helped along the way with some projects and different things that started up, and I've worked in a lot of different settings. I started my career in working with sex offenders in an inpatient program. So, I mean, this is a very different direction, but I think just doing packs, doing shows that it's fun. It's something that I enjoy. And at the same time, I'm talking about stuff that I love. And then in therapy, the clients that I work with now and have worked with in the past, pretty much everybody's a gamer anymore, of some sort. And so it's just sort of an easy in. And so now I'm starting to expand into looking at, like, how do I earn a living versus how do I enjoy what I do? And that's been something that has always been a big question as a therapist, because unlike popular belief, we do not make boku bucks. We don't walk out of school and make copious amounts of money.
Why am I doing this PhD if not for the money? Capitalism. What?
Because people take you more seriously. I really don't know. It's been my goal since I was a kid to get my doctorate
Absolutely
in psychology.
Same.
So yeah. This has been since I was 13 years old, this has been the goal. So that's where that started. And that's because my brother he really grew in junior high school, which is the equivalent of middle school, but the grades you start and end in are slightly different. Mm-hmm. But basically in my middle school years, I connected with that same school counselor and led her Positive Role Models program. And I was super in church at the time and, you know, sang in the youth band and did all of those things. And so I enjoyed, I was a people person. And then now I
you
get to people-y people online. Yeah. Big surprise.
You being a positive role model? What? They let anyone sign up for that? Like,
I don't know. I don't know if I'm always a positive role model in the PG space. Sometimes, definitely so. But sometimes, I don't know that I'm always perfect in that way. I have a potty mouth, but I do care deeply. I care a lot.
No, that's fair. I think
Care Bears was also consequentially one of my favorite movies growing up, but although that was a bit creepy as well, looking back.
You mean teddy bears that, like, blast you with their emotions? That's not strange.
Well, the premise is strange, but then the movie was also very creepy. Have you ever seen the Care Bears movie? The, like, circa 1980s Care Bears movie?
I'll be honest, I haven't. I've seen, I was subjected to, because I have younger siblings, like the animated TV series. But that's
totally different. This was like, the premise was the Care Bears go to a fair. It wasn't a Care Bear fair, but it was a fair where the Care Bears were there.
How did you make that rhyme? What?
I don't know. But they went to, like, a county fair or something, and there was a magician. And there was a young boy who really wanted to do magic, or he was really good at magic or something, but something about it was nefarious and there was dark magic. And then it was, like, making everybody really sad, and the Care Bears had to come and save everybody. But there were some, like, really detrimental moments where they, like, not only did the child actively attack the Care Bears, but, like, it was just really messed up.
I was gonna say, that sounds really messed up.
It was. And then, like, I grew up on movies like Ferngully, which again lead us back to anti-capitalism.
Yes. Eat the rich.
That's it. And environmentalism, of course. And then,
seriously, yeah. Like, based on these values, you love Final Fantasy VII. You literally play as an eco-terrorist bringing down the evil capitalist Perfect. Organization trying to actively destroying the world.
I love it. Yeah. Because, I mean, Bioshock is another one of my all-time favorite series. And, that sounds right up my alley.
What a game. Yeah. So, So I'm from Liverpool, which is traditionally kind of seen as like a very sort of socialist place, but like legitimately like that type of playing like Final Fantasy VII, from a young age, definitely further instilled some of those values. Like, we should destroy the big companies that are like destroying the planet. We should do that. And it took me a few years to realize that, like, that's actually what's happening in the real world. But the parallels are there. Yeah.
Yep. But I think it is. They're all statements around it. Critiques of it, storytelling around it. So we just love to look at ourselves as humans.
I mean, that's I don't like people. That's why I chose to study them.
That's it.
I
found people socially confusing, which now that I have been diagnosed as neurodivergent makes a lot more sense. But I just did it because I wanted to understand what makes people tick, for being honest.
Fair.
Like, that was the core of why I studied psychology. It sounds really sad. I mean, I care, I want to help people. No, I wanted to know what makes people tick.
That's why
I started in forensics.
Nice.
Well, yeah, I wanted to know why criminals do what they do. And my dissertation was either going to be role play. Like, nobody studied individually played games at the time. And so that's what I wanted to study. Not because I wanted to be different or special, but because I wanted to learn about individually played games. Sure. At the time, I didn't buy it, and then I came out, and then now I feel different and special. But not because I'm gay, but just because I can be me. But I think that there's this bit about, like, humans are weird, and so I wanted to understand. And I've always loved really creepy shit. And then I was going to study. I was basically going to do Mindhunter as my dissertation, not the show, but like. Go and talk to serial killers.
Yeah, yeah.
And like cult leaders or games.
That, I mean.
So here I sit.
That's a toss up. So, funnily enough, it's funny. I feel like, I don't know if I've actually said this to you before, but my undergrad was forensic psych and criminal justice. So, like, we were actually looking at, criminal psychology, but also like the actual process of the justice system in the UK.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of my favorite modules was in my third year, an optional, Dr. Emma Teresa Murray. And we looked at crimes of the powerful, so it was about like power dynamics in crimes, like a lot of like corporate crime and a lot of Foucault, absolute legend that he is. That's an interesting parallel.
Talk off podcast sometime because I have personal encounters with folks who have done very large white collar crime.
Oh,
I bet you've studied that person.
Nice, that sounds awesome.
Yeah,
forensic psych's really interesting. Like, there's something really weird when you're like. Going to an exam, people are like, what's your exam on? I'm like, oh, I'm profiling the Yorkshire Ripper, a serial killer. And they're like, I'm sorry, what? And I'm like, no, like, I have to draw a little map and put X's where people were found and do a profile and link it to theory. And people are like, Chris, what the heck are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, I know, right?
Yep. I mean, it was a weird time when I was in my master's program working with sex offenders. By day, and then by night, my sister-in-law was beginning her photography career, and so I was doing boudoir photo shoots for her and doing wedding shows. As I'm, like, trying not to let any of the sex offenders know that I'm taking these photos. But take me seriously, I'm your therapist.
That's another bit that's going to have to also get clipped in there. Working with sex offenders by day and taking boudoir photos at night. Nice.
Hey, therapists have their own lives too. We don't sleep under our desks, neither do teachers. That's true. A weird fact for children to learn.
That's you just blowing so many minds. Oh, but I mean, you're not wrong. It's like a big thing, not to make the podcast too blue an episode, but it's like a big thing in like the disability community. Like, yeah, we don't sleep under our desks either, It's like, this is a it might, I don't know, spoil a couple of people's dispositions, but it's a true fact.
It is. People have lives outside of where you see them, and it's weird to think of. Like, I always have that conversation with my teen and child clients when I'm approaching PAX, because one PAX is in Seattle, which is the area I primarily provide virtual therapy to. And so it's like, you might see me there. It might feel weird to see me there. You might see me at the grocery store. It's okay. It's going to be all right to see me peopling without being the person that you think me of as a professional. I too buy groceries. You witness me consuming them sometimes. Like, secretly, I buy them for myself.
Secretly, we are actually people.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Although, speaking of capitalism, people are trying to change that too. But it'll be interesting to see where AI goes. Black Mirror, full circle.
Yeah. Speaking of Black Mirror, though, it popped into my mind just slightly before. If you like dark, semi-dystopian TV shows, get on Inside Number 9.
Inside Number 9.
Yes. Robert Pemberton
I'm going to write that down.
And Reese Shearsmith, who did like The League of Gentlemen, if you've heard of that. And they did a show, very inappropriately named, but called Psychoville, which is sort of like, imagine like it's a sitcom, but like everyone is just like, you know, unhinged. To the degree where, like, you know, with my sort of mental health advocacy hat on, it actually does sort of, like, in a way that's quite important, discuss some of the way mental health might present in people that we might not be aware of, while also being dark and funny, and then maybe making inappropriate jokes at the same time.
Love that.
You can do both. But Inside Number 9 is it's an anthology series, like Black Mirror, so every episode it lives in its own continuum, and it's really dark and incredibly funny.
I'm going to definitely check that out. That sounds right up my alley. I love it.
Yeah, the more we talk, the more I'm like, Sarah, she's class. You know, we have a lot in common, and I like that.
We get along well.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I love British TV, too. Like, I'm not one of those people where it's like, unless it's in my language, I'm not watching it. No. I'll watch other things all the time. Although British TV is in my language. But...
Well, I mean, it's not in Midwestern, so...
Right. Well, and it's not American, which Americans love American stuff, but I like to...
America. You know, freedom.
America.
Guns.
Yeah. But, like, Dracula is next up on my queue.
Nice.
I know that's a classic one, also came out a long time ago. Something about being a therapist means I have to watch the stuff that my clients are watching right now in lieu of... watching something else, like talking to clients about the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case. I know more about that case than I ever intended on knowing about any celebrities, because I'm not a big like celebrity head. But there are some cool psychology responses to it. And then at the same time, the terrible, petty psychologist in me ends up watching those to make sure that they're not completely off base. So then when I go back to my clients, I can say, yeah, that was a pretty good take. Or, well, here's some things that I'm fundamentally concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to crack that walnut open all the way, but my observation of that was I also had very little interest in it. And I had, like, friends, like, having very definitive sides, and I'm like, why? You know absolutely nothing about what actually was happening.
Right.
You know, they were actually, I believe, both found to have defamated each other. So, like, no one won. They both lost.
Yeah.
Which just, to me, makes
a lot
the
of
whole
money
thing
was spent to prove... Yeah, they both did shitty things. But it is nice in a variety of ways. Like, one of the ways that I like to use geek and game media in therapy is as examples of or parallels to things we're talking about clinically. And so it provided a lot of fodder for that.
Can you give us, obviously a non-specific sort of, like, example of, like, a time you've used a game to illustrate a point?
Sure. Yes. How much time do you want?
It's a podcast episode. Let's go.
I've worked with folks on a variety of issues utilizing games. So, like, frustration tolerance.
Yeah.
Great example of something that people want to build. Games like any Souls-like game is great, depending on aesthetic or desire. Teamwork or communication, we can play a game like Portal 2. Mm-hmm. I had a client once who had OCD, and it exhibited in a variety of ways in life, But one way was very, very, very structured routine play of Farmville. And so we started off testing exposure therapy is something that's very common, listeners, for OCD, to challenge and manage the concerns that come up in the head of what happens if you don't follow the arbitrary rules your brain makes up. So like the classic is washing your hands to avoid germs, and then you end up washing your hands way, way, way too much. You do skin damage. It wastes your time. It's exorbitant in your water bill and your soap expenditure. But if we're going to like reduce down to one example,
I'm not laughing like at it. It's just like, I've never heard the phrase soap expenditure before, and that made me laugh.
Yeah. It is a phrase I've had to professionally use. It's a weird, being a therapist is weird. My Google history is weird. Like, oh. I'll be Googling things when in conversations with clients of like, well, I've never thought about that. Or what is that? Or what's the statistic on that? Or how do we figure this out? The Google's so confused about who I am or what I'm interested in. It's great for my online privacy. Yes.
They can't give me targeted ads if they don't know who I am.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. That's a great way to throw them off. Where were we? ADHD, going backwards, talking about utilization of Farmville. So to prove that the sky is not going to fall upon us if we change course, I endorse that this client could play as much Farmville as they wished, but they must not organize their crops.
Oh, I mean, that part of me just felt very upset by that statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was super. So that's exposure therapy for you. Like, if someone is afraid of it, at first you talk about germs, and then you like go sit at a one exposure therapy technique that we talked about a lot in school was like how to expose someone with germs, because that's like the stereotypical for OCD. You go sit at a playground and watch kids.
Ooh.
Kids are gross. Kids are super gross.
That's another bit for the clip there. Go and watch. Go sit and watch kids. Whoops-a-daisy.
So much gold. But then you touch the playground equipment. That's another level of the exposure therapy, and then eventually, you know, people do super gross stuff.
Chris, what are you doing? Just going to touch a swing. Why? Yep. Just fancy it. Give it a little tickle, you know. I might put my butt on the slide as well. Like, what, who knows?
Exposure therapy has to look so weird in most settings. So weird.
So, legit, when you're doing that, do you have to have, like some ID with you? Or, like, do you wear a fluorescent vest so that people know that you're not just going and touching playground equipment for no reason?
Undoubtedly not. However, one thing I will say, technology and games are great, is that, like, I once had a client who was very phobic of needles. VR... You can utilize, once you've done the buildup of like looking at pictures of needles, looking at needles in videos, then all of a sudden you can put on the VR headset and practice without sensation the like witnessing of a medical procedure. So like drawing blood, getting a shot, and then it can slowly reduce the anxiety around it, theoretically, to the point where you are more tolerant of such practices. But so that was a really big challenge. But once that client had done that practice with Farmville for a while, it was okay. It was chaotic, but it was okay. And then all of a sudden, time limitations on certain activities or rigidity of rules and expectations shifted a little bit, because it was like, okay, I don't have to wash my body 3 times in the shower in order for me to avoid my mom yelling at me. It's going to be okay.
Mm. No, that makes sense.
Wash my body once, maybe twice.
Twice on the weekends, if you've got the time, you know?
That's it. If you're feeling really, really playful with your water bill.
Well, I mean, yeah, it depends what you've been up to, you know what I mean? Some stains just don't come out.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I've been working to get this stain off my wrist forever, and it won't come off. No, I have a tattoo on my wrist, listeners, for who are not witnessing a visual. Yeah, otherwise, like, there are some really cool utilizations of tabletop simulator that, like, don't limit yourself. I've worked with everywhere from children to everybody else doing all kinds of different, like, it's a great way to create a visual map or structure of an event that happened. It's a great way to play, like, I have one very brilliant client who I've worked with in the past who, like, literally will make up an entire magic style or structured, like Magic the Gathering, structured card game, all in our heads with playing cards, with a 52 card deck.
Nice.
And you just have to improv. And all of a sudden there is child-led coordination and compromise and social efforts being performed together, which were the therapeutic endeavors. But it just looks like we're goofing off, making up stuff with cards, coming up with themes.
So I want to kind of put this image together in the minds of the listeners. So you will go and you will take people to sit and watch children touch playground equipment and then play imaginary card games. I can imagine that might look quite interesting from the outside to view.
Yes.
But all the clinical notes are...
It's true. Clinical notes are very strange. Although, to be clear and transparent, I personally don't do official exposure therapy. I was working with an OCD client on maintenance. I only work with OCD clients on maintenance because I believe that I want to refer my clients to a specialist who will handle what they're trying to manage most efficiently and effectively. And I am not specially trained in OCD.
And you took the words out of my mouth there, and that it's probably worth noting for listeners as well that more than one type of therapy exists.
Yes.
You know, different horses for courses and such.
That's it.
And even if it's the same therapist, two different therapists doing the same technique, it might be completely different. Chatting to Dr. B the other day, actually. We were talking about something along these lines of, like, and he quoted, like, Bruce Lee of, I don't fear the person who has done 10,000 techniques once. I fear the person who's done one technique 10,000 times. And he's like, that's kind of like the same philosophy of therapy. Like, it might be great if you have all these different tools, but if your proficiency with those tools is poor, that's not going to be as good as if you're, like, really good with one sort of utility,
yes.
Right?
But I think also being good at one utility doesn't mean that's the only thing that will fix people. Although people aren't fixable. We're all wonderful humans and we all need to work ourselves.
Speak for yourself. I'm not a wonderful human. Okay, let's just get that right out there. Thank you very much.
You're right. You're fabulous.
No, you're fabulous with your rainbow narwhals.
Oh, no, you shut up. But I think that that's using a cookie cutter technique. We all might be cookies, but we don't have to be the same shape.
No. And we all don't have to be the same flavor. Raisin oatmeal.
I hope not.
Raisin oatmeal is vastly underrated, in my opinion.
I respect your opinion, and I prefer other kinds of cookies.
I'm not saying I don't enjoy like a nice triple chocolate or whatever, but I'm just saying raisin oat should not be sniffed at. And far too many people.
Personally, I like chocolate chip and oat.
Now we're talking exotic. Okay. Oof.
Good stuff.
Nice.
Toss a little peanut butter in there. Hoo-wee.
Oh boy. Now we're talking. Everyone
toss
is now suddenly...
Toss a little Oreo salad on top and all of a sudden you're having a party.
Party of one. That's the kind of
thing. You
wake up in the morning. There's a big spoon.
See me on the couch with the dogs. sitting with my bowl of Oreo salad.
Some upside down Tupperware. You wake up, you have no idea what happened. There's peanut butter everywhere. What happened
last
night?
That is my house anyways, because I own dogs. Peanut butter is the best bribery tool.
Hey, that's true. Works with people as well.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of people. Occupies the mouth for a long time. Another out of context quote there for you.
I'm trying to be quote-unquote professional, but I would be making so many jokes if this was not a recording right now. And I need listeners to know that that ammunition is there. I am just not going to fire it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Okay. I'm going to ask another question now as I try and regain some composure.
All right.
I like to sort of ask two sort of like really nice kind of big broad sweeping questions to let you sort of really pick up and run in any way you wish with them, right? But the first one is sort of what, if you had no limitations, there's no limitations at all, you have a limitless amount of money, a limitless amount of access to resources, people, experts, what's one project or thing you would like to do?
I mean, I would like to. There's a few things that come to mind. I have a burnout idea if I ever left the psychological world, but then also, I think it would be so nice to be able to create a psychological game that addresses matters of psychology and like concept of self, not unlike some games that we've played in the past, like Celeste or Senua's Sacrifice, but more in a like it's okay to need support way. But I would just want to run concept. I'd help with story. I'd make sure that things are good. Like a project management sort of approach rather than a, I know where my skills are and it's not in everything. But if I were to burn out, or, well, and of course fully fund all of the nonprofits always forever.
Drink.
Yeah, that's it. But if I were to burn out, and this has been something I've had long in my back pocket, beyond Oreo salad, something that I love to do is cook for my friends and family and loved ones. And one thing that I enjoy cooking and am probably most well known for with desserts other than my Oreo salad, indeed, is pudding shots. They're alcoholic in nature. Imagine a fudgesicle that's boozy. And I have created very many variations on this.
So could we get that as like a book, maybe? Or, you know, Dr. Sarah Hayes.
I want to open... I want to open a pudding shop boutique. So like a...
Oh, a boutique? Like a, ooh la la.
Like a dessert store. Yeah, but instead of ice cream or whatever, I want to do pudding shop popsicles. Nice. And so I don't know what I would even call it, but I enjoy cooking. I enjoy doing things... like hands-on. And so I think that that would be really fun for me. I wouldn't want to run the business side of it. I'd want somebody else to do that.
But and you have the resource to do so. So
I would in this theoretical. So that would be really fun. Awesome. I would enjoy that.
I've said to a few friends before, like, I'd love to, like, open, like, a bar that, like, you know, served a range of alcoholic and alcoholic-free drinks. But all the staff were, like, actual psychologists. So, like, you know, because, like, that trope of, like, everyone who speaks to the bartender. But like making sure that not even to provide advice, it's not therapy, but like just like that the bar people are fully equipped to deal with people telling them their problems. And like that's the hook of the bar, is that like, yeah, you're actually speaking to trained professionals that wanted to, let's be honest, stay out of academia because it's awful and evil.
Academia is hard. Yeah, it's messy. Ooh, that is a big walnut to crack. But I would be there. For sure. You could call it Quacks.
Quacks. Yeah, that's an excellent shout. That's an excellent shout. Quacks. Oh.
Is it a show?
I don't know. If it's not, it definitely is now. You've said it on the internet, so it is now. It's happened. It's too late.
It's true. that would be great, because then you could put ducks on it and it's subtle, but then we all know, truly, the end of the day.
Yeah. It's funny that you mention... like sort of wanting to make a specifically designed game, because it's something that relates to my work. It's something that I'm going to be writing about, so like in ye old thesis, about like, and it's to lend from our great friend and legend Dr. Kelly Dunlap, but she kind of like said that there are three kind of categories of game. There's like therapeutic, like games actively used in the therapy space, deliberately designed to assist with therapy, intentional games like Celeste, like Hellblade. And then sort of just commercial games, so games like Arkham Asylum has mental health tropes. And actually sort of like, you know, building on that a little bit to like deconstruct it. Because I think one of the big things is, we're getting really nerdy now, I apologize. But like one of the big problems in like research and reading is that, you know, it's really difficult to untangle even what people mean by a video game. It's not properly defined, right? And when we talk about mental health in games... like, you know, if you look at a couple of papers, a lot of the games, quote-unquote, that they look at really are sort of, like, edutainment kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Billy feels sad. What should Billy do? Three pop-up options, you know? Like, so I think, where do you sort of see that game being placed within those? Would you want it to be, like, deliberately therapeutic, or would you want it to be sort of, like, more intentional?
No. I want it to be an intentional game. I think the take-home message can still be powerful without being edutainment. words. Yeah, I have always found the impact of such things so much more powerful than like shoved in your face education. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like the subtlety. I like the like theme without it being, but done well, right? Because we look at games like, for example, for VR, like Nevermind. It's a nightmare simulator, basically, but it's the concept of it is also problematic. Mm. Because it's a, you are a, I think they use the term psychometrist, which is in the real world. Psychometrist is a person who administers psychological tests and assessments in order for then the psychologist who's running the situation to interpret and deliver results. In this, you are an assistant in an inpatient facility where you go from room to room and help patients heal their various, talking about flavors of trauma. And each simulation is a journey through their mind, and it has a heart rate monitor hooked up, and you have to stay calm inside when you witness the trauma, or else the environment will become more nightmarish as you go. So for example, there's one where you're going through a house. I believe it's where, for the listeners and viewers, apologies in advance. This is just a warning that I'm about to bring up themes that can be disturbing in nature, so take care of yourselves. But child abuse, I believe, and I'll leave it there. But when you're in that house, if you're stressed out, there's a very popular image. If you Google the game Nevermind, you'll see like before and after of like being in a kitchen and then being in a kitchen that's flooding. So when you're stressed or your heart rate is increasing, you're biologically reacting to the game, it makes it worse for you. So yeah, and that game features everything from like floating doll baby heads to like witnessing things like substance abuse or physical abuse, or
yeah,
just kind of disturbing.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that. I feel remotely queasy.
Yeah.
About that.
As a person who practices psychology, I feel like the benefit of an intentional game, like one of my all-time favorite games is It Takes Two. Mm-hmm. I have chosen that with Dr. Kelly Dunlap when we returned to our streaming on the Take This Plays channel.
I heard there was a pretty classy person who put that idea forward.
There is, that would happen to be you. Thank you so much. But
and not just a pretty face, you know.
There's psychological themes in that game that like there's literally now given. Culturally, I wish they didn't do what they did with this character, but there is a book of love who guides the couple in the game who are like a feuding married couple who are talking about the concept of divorce. Their child is very sad about it, magically transform them into her dolls. And you have to, as dolls, navigate the world and try to reunite with your daughter and fix the issue. Now, there is the book of love that she has used to do this spell unintentionally. And the book does couples therapy through the game. Literally. And I don't think that that was intentionally created as an education piece. I think that was intentionally created as a story that has themes of couple problems and the dynamics therein. And one way to drive the story forward is to have this very silly book that makes you go do another task together for the sake of team building through a different filter.
That makes sense.
So I like that kind of intentionality. It can be very on the nose, but I don't want it to be in this theoretical, Sarah can do anything, no holds bars. I wouldn't want it to be, what should we do to support Billy?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Billy needs to learn how to be of support for Billy, but also Billy needs to learn how to deal community support and find resources, but we don't have to make it an educational journey for people to learn that either. Some of the most salient stories from our childhood are ones that we learned that had nothing to do with education.
True story. That was like, oh, that's a great quote. Oh, sadly, not funny enough to make the cut that's going to incriminate
me. I was going to say, are you going to do a based clips?
So one of my other sort of questions as we wind down the episode, mm-hmm. is there anyone, anything you'd like to give a little shout out to, someone who inspires you or anything like that? Just because, you know, we talked about like the journey you've been on and how you've got here, but it's always nice to give a little shout out to the people we admire the most. We've name dropped a few of our famous friends already.
Yes.
But anyone or anything you want to give a shout out to?
I, of course, would be remiss to not shout out to folks like Anita Sarkeesian, who inspired me along the way to like focus on advocacy and equality, but also folks like Dr. Rachel Cowart, who is a mover and shaker in the research space, Dr. Kelly Dunlap, who gave me my first opportunity to do any professional writing in the space back when she was at iThrive, Dr. B for getting my foot in the door from a professional standpoint, at the same time, Dr. Bean for giving me the opportunity at PAX. There's a lot of really amazing folks out there doing this work, including you yourself. I feel like all of the people around us inspire me on a regular basis because of the interesting stuff we're all doing together. And it's weird to be part of the, like, I'll say it because when I was in your position just a couple years ago, where I was finishing up my work and school, I thought to myself, there's not many people doing this work, and there aren't. And so we are part of a pioneering group of psychologists who are going to be, you know, massive. I never intended to be historical, but we will be historical. And it's a strange thing to think. Mm. Yeah. So it's weird to be part of a movement that is new within a field, but it's really exciting and a lot of fun.
And it's a pleasure to be in the room with people like yourself. You know, I very much walked around, I think, the entirety of PAX as, like, you know, that emoji with the stars in the eyes for the majority of that weekend, if not the whole weekend, to be fair.
I feel like it was mutual.
Oh, please. It was just, yeah, it was a good time. I feel like I do reference it a lot because it was obviously one of the best things ever. But just, like, I don't know, there is that surreal feeling of physically getting to sit down with people whose, like, work you've read and whose content you've enjoyed for so long.
Yes. You know? Now my sights are set on, like, I one day, if I can meet Keshana Gray, that would be a bucket list item. Nice. Or all of the folks doing some of the, like, fake geek girl sort of, like, work on discrimination in the game space. But yeah, I adore our group of colleagues so much and all of the work that we do because it's special and interesting, and it makes a difference for a lot of folks because games are making a difference for a lot of folks, especially through the panini.
Oh yeah. So like to always wrap up with some fun quick fire questions. Are taking a retreat completely optionally to a biodome of your preference, because I for one would not go to a desert island, because if you've seen me, that would not be Albino friendly. I say that on the back of a heat wave over here in the UK, where I can verify it was not my ideal climate. Remain indoors, stay hydrated. So you are taking with you one sort of film or DVD or box set, whatever. If it comes packaged, there's one thing you can take it. An album, a book, and a video game. What are you taking?
Sure. My one movie is Big Fish. It is a pinnacle of a bunch of things that I love, like Tim Burton and really fascinating storytelling. My one album would be, if it existed in this theoretical biodome, it would probably be like all of the biggest earworms from Billie Eilish, because I unashamedly love her. One book is really hard. I have fallen out of love with reading beyond academic books, which isn't exactly a love as much as a necessity, but I suppose if I were to pick a book, let me turn around and take a peek of something I wish I could be reading.
The tough question.
This is a hard podcast. One.
Yeah, we have the tough questions.
They are the tough questions. I'm terrible at choices. I think one of the most impactful books from my dissertation research was called Second Person, but it was a sort of a media examination book. I've always wanted to read third person. Oh. So I'll find you a link, because that's very obscure. It's not like a, you know, Pride and Prejudice. I also have an Amazon list, an evergreen list of books that I have to, that I wish to read or that I own, for folks who are like, what are your recommendations for psychological, like, gaming books?
Oh, nice.
So I can always look at that. What else did you ask?
And then, the big one, a video game. What are you taking?
Oof. Slime Rancher, hands down. Or Viva Pinata. I can always play some more Viva Pinata.
Okay. Nice.
I think it's one of the most underrated games.
You reckon we'll ever get a sequel?
No. We did get a sequel.
We did? Oh, wait. Oh,
they jumped that shark.
Oh, right, okay. I always feel like whenever there's like an Xbox thing, people saying like they want another Viva Pinata game. I always hear people saying that.
Say what?
They're always like, when are we gonna get some more Viva Pinata or a Viva Pinata remaster? Yeah. I want Viva Pinata on next gen.
We did in the rare replay. We got it for next gen, both editions. The first one and Trouble in Paradise. I would also be remiss if I said anything other than books for the next Cohort book that's coming out here that she's written with one of the streaming ambassadors from Take This as well.
Oh, yes.
But I'm not going to hint too far beyond that because I don't know where in time that is going to be when this is published.
I have heard of that in Twitter, so it's publicly thing. Like, yes. I know it's a project, but yes, I'm also excited to read that as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. You made light work of that. A lot of people get to those questions and are like, oh no, what am I going to, I can't choose. Get a bit flustered.
I floundered with the book.
So, I always like to turn the tables and say, would you like to ask me a question? I've had the sort of Biodome list question a couple of times. And
don't worry. Know,
if there's anything you want to ask, now is the time to do it.
I got you. You know, what's the weirdest sandwich you've ever had?
The weirdest sandwich I've ever had?
Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm a bit like vanilla when it comes to sandwiches, just generally speaking. But I think if I was like going like the funkiest, that maybe like people would be like, what? Like, I think, let's see. Yeah, so like half, like legit question. You'll have Nutella in the US? Like a hazelnut spread, yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if it was like a very European centric thing or not. But like one side
we
bread.
Bastardize it like we will because, you know, it's America, but we put it on everything. Yeah.
So one like slice of bread Nutella, the other half peanut butter and then sliced banana in that. But like I take it up a level and do that with like a wholemeal pita bread. So I'll toast the pita bread so it's warm, cut it in half, then stuff the pita with like banana, peanut butter.
That just
Nutella.
Sounds practical. It's... Did you know you can top that with a little scoop Oreo salad?
I mean, you can put Oreo salad on everything, even if you're not eating it.
It's true. I will say the weirdest sandwich I've ever had was a staple visiting my grandparents in Iowa in a little lake. They lived on a lake called Okoboji, and the sandwich was equally as strange of a name, which was a peanut butter and sweet pickle sandwich. Don't knock it till you try it. Also, what is your Pokemon dream team?
Oh, gosh. I have not played anything from, like, the most recent gen. Okay. So I'm gonna throw that out there. But that's such a good question. I mean, obviously, you know, no legendaries because we ain't babies. You know, we play Pokemon properly. But I do think, so I actually replayed Pokemon Yellow a few years back, so I'll just go with the team from that. So obviously you have Pikachu.
Do the classics, yeah.
On Yellow, you can abuse the fact that you get all three of the starter Pokemon, so that's four. But like Pikachu, Venusaur, Charizard, and Blastoise is a banging team. And then Kabutops, and I think Snorlax.
Nice.
Is a team, so like some good balance in there.
I like it. So risky. I like it.
I'm honestly like Pokemon is a franchise I need to get back to and like actually get interested in again. Yeah, but who has the time? You know, I spend more time like writing about games or reading about games than I do playing them. Or like I've fallen into this thing now where I'll just play something because I just fancy it, and I'll play it for like a few hours, and then just I'll just move on to the next thing. But I've been playing a few games like for research purposes. I use finger quotes there, but it's like, so I'm playing through Omori at the minute because of its portrayals of mental health. And it's definitely more like commercial in that it's like its representation is good and accurate, but it's kind of like they're just not for like the sake of, but it's like it's very much mechanical. And it handles it
just
with a
reminded
good,
me
with a good content warning and stuff.
I have to play a game for NDA reasons, and I almost forgot to play it. So thank you for that reminder.
Just say interviewing guests, saving lives.
Sticky note.
You know?
It's true. Usually I have my system pretty well worked out, but I would agree. There's something funny about the work we do because we do end up playing games for research purposes.
Yeah.
And
no
sometimes
joke.
They're weird games.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly. I played through more hours of Persona 5 than I can count for research purposes.
I need to play Persona. It's on my list.
Know in advance that there's a lot of weeby things. Like, there's a lot of penises.
I mean,
for inexplicable reasons.
If, well, I mean, you sent me like the screenshot of that. Was it like a boss? That was, you know, I'm not going to describe it, but that was, I did not sleep well that night, I'll say that. Sarah, where is the best place for people to find you on the internet should they wish to follow your shooting star trajectory of awesomeness?
Oh my goodness. I mean, as we all begrudgingly admit, the games industry lives on Twitter, so Twitter's probably the easiest place to find me. You can find me at Dr. Hayes PsyD, so it's DrHaysPsyD. Otherwise, on any host of all of the nonprofit websites.
Drink.
Game to Grow.
One more.
Take this. You can find me on twitch.tv/takethis. org on every other Monday. We're going to do a community night coming up. Obviously, it's too late for our dear listeners and viewers, but for your information, we're going to do that on August 1st.
Let's go.
And then, let's see. I very, very rarely stream on Queer Women of Esports, but sometimes I'll be on there doing like a fundraiser or various other things at Queer Esports on Twitch and Twitter. Take this org, Game to Grow. I do things with Game to Grow very much.
I do things with Game to Grow very much.
They're my primary source of income.
And so much more.
And so much more. There's podcasts. I feel like I need to break into song. There's podcasts and websites and nonprofits and
drink
therapy.
One more.
And
let's go.
You don't walk away from this having to use the restroom. My goodness, what are we doing?
Like, thank you for being on this non-profit podcast. Hey! But no, it's wonderful to share the same time and space as yourself, Sarah, as always. A delight and a pleasure and a privilege to chat with you.
Thank
and we'll
you
now,
for
our video friends, click over to the end screen and then we'll wrap
up. Okay.
And that'll be that. So goodbye, everyone. Thank you for watching, listening, taking part. All the links and information you'll need will be attached to this episode wherever you found it. Enjoy it, take it easy, and as ever, look after your mind, body, and soul. Bye bye. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did. If you did, do please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps. Otherwise, check out the description of the episode for the links for the guest, but also to keep up with information about the show and myself. I really hope you enjoyed this listen. Until next time, take it easy, look after your mind, body, and soul, and I'll see you again for another episode very, very soon. Bye bye.